Is it for a show, an update right now on what's happening in Mali as we speak, the ongoing hostage situation in Bamako, the capital? The U.S. military says U.S. special operation troops are working with Malian special operation forces to free the more than 140 hostages still inside the Radisson Blue Hotel right there in Bamako, which was seized by suspected Islamist gunmen this morning. And that does it for our broadcast. For the whole show today, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. The video is there, the audio is there, the podcast, and the transcript of our broadcast. We are hiring a director of development to lead our fundraising efforts. You can find out more at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Nermeen Sheikh, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Karen, Steve Martinez, Hani Massoud, Juan Carlos Davila, Pedro Rodriguez. Mike DiFilippo and Miguel Noguera are engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, David Prude, Ariel Boone, and Vesta Godars. And to our camera crew, John Randolph, Karen Crick-Meadows, Charina Nadura. Our website is democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
KBOO Portland, the time is 5 p.m. Coming up next is the KBOO Evening News.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Circus Church, Sunday, November 22nd, 9 p.m. at the Funhouse Lounge in Portland. There will be burlesque performers, circus artists, vocalists, audience games, confessions, and more. Again, that's Circus Church, Sunday, November 22nd, 9 p.m. at the Funhouse Lounge, 2432 Southeast 11th Avenue in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm. on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
I'm Shannon White with Partnership for Safety and Justice. In 2013, we helped pass a bill that was projected to stop prison growth in Oregon for 5 years. Now, just 2 years later, the Department of Corrections says we need to open a new prison unit at the cost of nearly $10 million. Hear what happened. Tune in to Prison Pipeline on Monday, November 30th at 6:30 p.m.
Coming up next is the KBOO Evening News, and this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Saturday Market, open daily December 17th through December 24th for the Festival of the Last Minute. Saturday Market offers handmade arts, crafts, and other gifts created by artists from the Pacific Northwest and is located at Southwest Ankeny and NATO Parkway in Waterfront Park. Information at portlandsaturdaymarket.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a group of children in Washington have won a lawsuit requiring the state to take action on climate change.
Colorado officials have agreed to accept Superfund funds to help clean up a massive mine spill.
Airport service workers walk out on their jobs to protest low wages.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News, November 20th, 2015. I'm Callie Mikhail.
And I'm Martin Watson Dodge. An attack at a hotel in Mali has left at least 27 people dead. The attack began Friday morning at the Radisson Blue Hotel in Bamako, the country's capital. About 170 people were taken hostage, including diplomats, aircrew from France and Turkey, and nationals from India and China. Over the following 9 hours, Malian special forces and their U.S. and French counterparts evacuated the hostages. Some of the attackers still remain in the upper floors of the hotel, with special forces trying to dislodge them. Al-Murabitun, an African jihadi group affiliated with Al-Qaeda has claimed responsibility for the attack on Twitter, although this claim has yet to be verified.
A judge in Washington state late last night issued a ruling that requires the state to address the impacts of climate change for future generations. Eight children brought a lawsuit against the state's Department of Ecology, arguing that their future survival depends on the state taking immediate action. Specifically, the youth petitioners requested that the Department of Ecology write a carbon emissions rule that protects the atmosphere. This case is one of several similar state cases, all initiated by youth and supported by our Children's Trust. For more, KBOO Radio's Monica Rabi spoke with Andrea Rogers, attorney with Western Environmental Law Center, who represented the youth.
Can you talk a bit about the significance of last night's ruling?
Yeah, certainly. It's a funny case because it's we lose, but we win.
Mm-hmm.
The judge issued an excellent decision in our case. She vindicated the fact that the youth petitioners have fundamental rights reserved by the Constitution to a healthful and pleasant environment, and she agreed that ecology has a statutory obligation to protect air quality for present and future generations, and she found that the agency has a fundamental responsibility to comply with the public trust doctrine and protect all public trust resources within their jurisdiction, including the navigable waters and the atmosphere. So an excellent legal decision. She did not order the agency to promulgate the rule that we were asking for. And the reason she did that was because earlier in the case, this summer, we had asked Governor Inslee to direct Ecology to promulgate a rule regulating carbon dioxide emissions. And the governor did that. And Ecology has commenced that rulemaking process. So because they had started that process, she did not order them to do our rule. But she certainly agreed with us in regard to our legal arguments.
Okay. And so can you speak a bit about to how this might set a precedent for the other states that have similar lawsuits?
Yes, that is our hope. You know, I think the great social movements of our time have been really bolstered by one or two legal decisions. And we're hoping that this legal decision is one of those cases. I think this is the first time that the court has, a court has resoundingly found that these youth have fundamental rights that are being impacted and will be impacted by climate change. And also that the government has a responsibility to do something about it. So I think in a variety of different contexts, this, her reasoning and the precedent that she sets can and should be used by other courts of law across the country and hopefully throughout the world.
Right. And could you also address the claim that these youth are being somehow used for a political purpose, that this wasn't their initiative?
Yeah, well, I think the best people to address that claim is the youth themselves.
Right.
And I think when you speak to them, you will realize that these are very committed kids who are climate activists, and this is a youth-driven effort. I'm certainly their lawyer, and, you know, they are like some of my other clients. They certainly give me instructions in terms of what they want to see and what they want to have done. So I think people who make that claim are very misinformed about who these kids are and why they're working so hard to protect the climate for their future and for the future of other citizens in this country.
And after this ruling, do you know where these youth petitioners plan to go from here? What are their next steps?
Yeah, I certainly. Our next steps are to ensure that Ecology in the rulemaking process puts Judge Hill's words into action. So we will be participating in that process to make sure that that happens. And we'll also be communicating directly with Governor Inslee and the Director of Ecology. And we're going to ask Governor Inslee to take this ruling with him in his heart and his hand to Paris, so that he can inspire other world leaders there and say, hey, we have a judge here in Washington State that recognizes the urgency of this crisis, and these kids have a fundamental legal right that can be protected under the law. So let's get going.
And has the Washington Department of Ecology had said anything in response about when they're going to actually start having to write these rules?
They are already at it. We're expecting a draft rule from them this winter, so I think in December. and they're expecting to finalize the rule next year. So they're going, and here we're hoping that this ruling will give that process some additional support.
Again, I've been speaking with Andrea Rogers of the Western Environmental Law Center. I'm Monica Rebby with KBOO Community Radio.
A wildfire that's been burning in the Olympic National Forest since May has finally been extinguished. The fire was the largest and longest lasting fire ever in the nation's only temperate rainforest. The last large fire in the park was the 300-acre Hopper Fire in 2010. Ignited by lightning, the fire burned out after about 2 weeks when rain and cooler temperatures returned. This year's fire was finally put out by rain after months of firefighting actions failed to extinguish it. At one point in the height of summer, crews installed a sprinkler system in the rainforest to dampen the blaze. But that effort was unsuccessful, and the fire continued to burn until this week. A final estimate of the burned area in the Olympic National Park has not yet been released.
Colorado officials say they are now ready to talk to the Environmental Protection Agency about a federally financed Superfund cleanup of inactive mines, according to the Associated Press. This would be an important step toward cleaning up the hundreds of idle mines that have been pouring acidic wastewater into the Animas River north of Silverton for years. No laws require mine operators to mitigate environmental damage, and in many cases, the owners simply walked away when mining ceased. Local jurisdictions have refused Superfund cleanup money in the past due to fear of losing tourism. However, the Gold King mine spill this summer increased pressure to act. Millions of gallons of polluted wastewater poured into rivers in Colorado, New Mexico, and Utah, including areas of the Navajo Nation and the Southern Ute Reservation. An EPA-led crew monitoring the site inadvertently triggered the spill on August 5th. Officials looked into alternatives to a Superfund cleanup, but found there were few other options because of the cost. Now they say they will accept the federal Superfund money to begin to clean up the mess.
This is American Education Week, a celebration of schools and all the people it takes to make them run smoothly. The 2015 theme is Great Public Schools, a Basic Right and Our Responsibility. David Kesters of KBOO News, in conjunction with the Oregon News Service, has more.
Schools are in the spotlight for American Education Week, which began Monday. Each day puts the focus on people who help make the public school experience a good one for students. Tuesday was Parents' Day, a reminder that family involvement is needed to make a great school. Portland's Creston School, grades K through 8, recently got the National PTA Award for Building Effective Family School Partnerships. Kate McCartney, a fourth grade teacher there, says an active PTA has made all the difference.
Parents have really helped the school come alive with functions outside of the school day, events that draw families in, so that kids are able to access school not just as a place where they go to learn reading, writing, and math, but really as a community hub.
McCartney points out that the neighborhood isn't high income, and Creston families speak more than a dozen native languages at home. She says creating a welcoming atmosphere has made for better communication between parents, teachers, and kids. Other days this week honor substitute educators, and in some communities, guests will visit schools as educators for a day. This Wednesday was Education Support Professionals Day, highlighting the contributions of janitorial and food service workers, bus drivers, and classroom aides. Helen Jacobs has driven a school bus in Albany for 20 years and says these staff members' interactions with kids can color a student's experience.
Sometimes those kids are the ones that are in trouble, or they're sad, or they don't talk to anybody else. Your attitude, how you've treated them, what you've said to that student might be the thing that changes their entire life.
Jacobs organizes a massive winter coat drive for kids through the Greater Albany Association of Classified Employees. This month, more than 500 coats were distributed. American Education Week has been celebrated annually since 1921. For KBOO News, I'm David Kesters.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for a media analysis of the current news on Counterspin at 6. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tonight's weather will reach a low of 33 degrees with mostly clear skies and no rain. This weekend will be mostly sunny, reaching 49 degrees, up to 73% humidity but no sign of rain. Today in history, in 1962, President Kennedy calls off the U.S. blockade of Cuba in return for promised removal of Soviet bombers from the island. The quote of the day is from John F. Kennedy's brother, Robert F. Kennedy, who was born 90 years ago today. There is another kind of violence, slower, but just as deadly, destructive as the shot or the bomb in the night. This is the violence of institutions, indifference and inaction, and slow decay. This is the violence that afflicts the poor, that poisons relations between men because their skin has different colors. This is the slow destruction of a child by hunger, and schools without books, and homes without heat in the winter. This is the breaking of a man's spirit by denying him the chance to stand as a father and as a man among other men. And this, too, afflicts us all.
It's time now for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
Here comes Thanksgiving, Hanukkah, and Christmas. It's a month-long season of friends, family, and spiritual reflection. Good Lord, shout the corporate bosses, are you nuts? Do you think America is some kind of Norman Rockwell fantasy land? This is the season of mass consumerism, bucko, so lift your tail end out of that lazy boy and hit the malls, pronto. And if you happen to have a job in a chain store, don't even think about taking a holiday, or you won't have a job the next day. Let us now praise the one God we all serve, Mammon. Years ago, Macy's started Black Friday as a kickoff to this holy month of frenzied commercialization. But it produced such a surge of profit that Walmart and other chains also converted to the church of perpetual selling. Black Friday used to begin the day after Thanksgiving, but reaching for more, Walmart started desecrating Thanksgiving itself by opening their doors to the Black Friday masses at 6 p.m. on the night of Thanksgiving. This year, with Macy's, Target, JCPenney, and others also pushing the Friday shop-a-rama into Thursday, Toys R Us will open at 5 p.m., intruding even deeper into Thanksgiving's family dinner. And pushing excess to a new high, Kmart is expected to once again open its doors at 6 a.m. on Thanksgiving morning. Still, a Walmart executive said, "We thought 6 o'clock p.m. was the exact right time to win the weekend." Wow, did you ever think of Thanksgiving as something to win? But then, your spiritual devotion to Mammon probably is not as ardent as that executive's. Meanwhile, the same guy reports that the 1 million low-wage workers who will have to staff the Thanksgiving profit grab are, quote, really excited to work that day. This is Jim Hightower saying, sure they are. Excited as in agitated.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
A free breakfast program in North Portland has launched a fundraising campaign to try to keep the program alive. KBOO's Steve Zavodnik spoke with the founder of the program, local organizer Ajamu Umi, for more.
Ajamu, could you tell me a little bit about the free breakfast program?
Well, the free breakfast program is a program for the All-African People's Revolutionary Party here in Portland. And the All-African People's Revolutionary Party, or the AAPRP, is a pan-African revolutionary political party that's based in Africa. We have chapters all over the world, so part of the work that we do here in our new chapter here in the Pacific Northwest is carrying out this free breakfast program. And what we do is every Monday and Friday at the Columbia International Cup coffee shop, we serve breakfast, and we have a little educational component which consists of lessons in West African Twi, which is a Bantu language there, and spoken in Ghana, for example, And we also do storytelling, and we talk about, like this morning, we had a conversation about what people call Thanksgiving, we call Thanksgiving. So we talk to the children about Thanksgiving.
And so where is the coffee shop located?
So the coffee shop is at 9022 North Newman Avenue in the New Columbia area of North Portland. And New Columbia is significant because it is the highest concentration of people of African descent in the entire state of Oregon.
What kind of help do you need?
Well, you know, we fund the breakfast program out of our pockets, and, you know, we get by on a shoestring. But right now, the primary and the urgent matter is in assisting the Columbia International Cup Coffee Shop. And, you know, if people are not familiar, this spot has been an outstanding addition to the oppressed communities in Portland. It serves as an open and safe space for people to do all types of events there, and people are doing those types of events there, including our breakfast program. So that coffee shop, being a new business, like most businesses, you know, have difficulty getting off the ground, needs community help. And I think that it's great for people to financially support the coffee shop because it's essentially a community space. So in supporting the coffee shop, people are supporting a very positive community space. So right now, we want to direct anyone that wants to help the breakfast program to go to the GoFundMe page for Columbia International Cup, and please donate whatever you can. They need money to in order to meet some financial obligations by the end of this month. So we want to ensure that they do that. And it's not just for our program. I mean, we're revolutionary. So, you know, wherever we have to go, we'll adjust our work and do it. But this is a very positive community space, and we want to make sure that it stays operational.
And when you talk to people who've come in and brought their kids in for the breakfast, how do they find out about it, or how have they found out about it before?
Well, mostly through just our going door-to-door, word of mouth, talking to people. You know, being on KBOO, of course, helps spread the word. I mean, it's very difficult for us to get the word out. Being a revolutionary party, we don't have, you know, mounds of financial resources. So we just do the best we can to reach as many people as we can, and the word spreads, you know, as it spreads. The word-of-mouth approach has been very effective. I mean, like I say, you know, we get children in there, and parents are starting to tell other parents. So, you know, we haven't had a problem having people come through.
All right. Well, you've heard it here, Portland. Thanks very much, Jamu.
Thank you. Forward ever.
My name's Steve Zvonik, and this is KBOO Radio.
Portland's home demolition tax proposal is back, only this time without the rebate loophole benefiting developers. Portland Mayor Charlie Hales is once again pushing his $25,000 home demolition tax in an effort to curb rising housing costs, according to the Oregonian. The tax is intended to discourage the tearing down of existing homes and the replacement with new and less affordable housing. However, the original proposal introduced last month angered some neighborhood activists for including a $25,000 rebate if a developer added housing density, such as tearing down one home and replacing it with two. The new changes now call for the $25,000 tax to apply to nearly all home demolitions, including those adding housing density. The tax would not apply to homes demolished outside single-family neighborhoods, and rebates would still be offered to demolitions that prompt construction of affordable housing. Money generated from the tax would be dedicated to affordable housing efforts. December 2nd is the earliest the City Council may vote on the proposal, though it is unclear at this time how they will react.
A new facility to help people suffering from mental health crises will open in Portland in 2016. Numerous studies have shown that there are not enough resources to help people with mental illness in the Portland area. The future site of the Unity Center for Behavioral Health will be on Legacy's Holiday Park campus in Northeast Portland. City officials say this site will become the new ground zero for emergency and crisis care. 1 in 20 Oregon adults experience mental illness at some point in their lives, according to the National Alliance on Mental Illness. When left untreated, it can prompt homelessness, joblessness, and even suicide. Portland's suicide rates is 3 times the national average. The new center will be a coordinated effort between the City of Portland, Multnomah County, and 4 provincial medicinal services suppliers. Previous efforts to create a triage center for people in mental health crises failed largely because police failed to make use of them. It's unknown at this point if the Portland police will receive additional training to get people to the triage center instead of arriving on the scene of a mental health crisis and escalating the situation. The Portland police are currently under a binding order from the U.S. Department of Justice to improve their relations with people in mental health crises because the police department was found to engage in excessive force in a 2012 investigation.
Just as the hectic holiday travel season gets underway, airport service workers in some of the nation's major hubs walked off their jobs. While the walkout doesn't include Portland International Airport, PDX, one worker is among 100 who flew to Washington, D.C. to make their case for higher wages and collective bargaining rights. KABU's Demi Halinius has more in collaboration with the Oregon News Service.
Oregon's busiest airport isn't among the 7 where service workers went on strike yesterday, but janitors, baggage handlers, wheelchair assistants, and others at the Portland International Airport say they all have the same complaints. Julie Hayden, who works as a janitor at PDX, caught a plane to Washington, D.C. this week to attend a national rally for higher wages and the right to join a union. Hayden says it isn't easy to support a family on $11 an hour, but this is about more than money.
No matter what we ask our companies regarding what our needs are, proper safety, whether it's gear or training, you know, even more time, they're not being met. We're having to fight for it.
Airports and airlines subcontract most their service work. SEIU, the union that organized the rally and this week's airport walkouts, says not enough is being done to hold subcontractors accountable for how their workers are paid and treated, and those who try to unionize are often retaliated against. At PDX, Hayden says she's responsible for keeping 15 gate areas, 3 operations areas, and a boardroom clean on her shifts. She thinks the busy holiday travel season is a good time to call attention to how much money the airlines are making and how little of it goes to the workers who make the travel experience as pleasant as possible.
We definitely work very, very hard, and we love our jobs, and we try to show it to the best of our ability, but we work more and more, and we're getting less and less.
The workers are a part of the Fight for 15 movement for $15 hourly wages. At PDX, the majority of contract workers are not represented by a union, although some of them are determined to change that. For KABU News, I'm Demi Halinius.
In Saudi Arabia, a Palestinian poet has been condemned to death for renouncing Islam, a charge he denies. Ashraf Fayyad, 35 years old, said he had no legal representation at his trial. He has been given 30 days to appeal the ruling. Supporters of Fayyad, who has curated art shows in Jeddah and at the Venice Biennale, believe his punishment is actually revenge by the morality police for posting a video online showing police in the city of Abha lashing a man in public. The religious police first detained Fayyad in August 2013 after receiving a complaint that he was cursing Allah and the Prophet Muhammad, insulting Saudi Arabia, promoting atheism through his poetry, and spreading destructive thoughts. The case went to trial in February 2014. The complainant and 2 members of the religious police told the court that, among other crimes, Fayyad had conducted illicit relationships with women and stored some of their photographs on his mobile phone. Fayyad denied the accusations and told the court he was a faithful Muslim and repentant to God. A panel of judges ruled that his repentance should not prevent him from being executed.
In the latest news from U.S.-occupied Afghanistan, Badakhshan's Yamgan district falls to Taliban militants for the 2nd time in 6 months. A coordinated attack from different angles resulted in the successful capture of the area. Due to bad weather conditions, reinforcements did not reach Yamgan in time. Taliban have a strong presence in the neighboring districts from where they plan their attacks. A spokesman for the Ministry of Interior said that 120 insurgents were killed during the operation.
The universe is on its last legs. At least that's what survey data presented this week at the International Astronomical Union Assembly. According to the survey, the stars in some 200,000 galaxies are getting dimmer. What that means in a nutshell? Before you know it, it's goodbye, universe. Turn out the lights, the party's over. How long have we got to arrange our affairs and buy burial plots? Probably a little over 100 billion years, so there's no time to waste. But seriously, the situation is even more dire than that. Chances are none of us will last long enough to wave goodbye as the universe goes kaput. In fact, it's pretty clear that human beings and the planet we call home will be goners long before then. Lead researcher Simon Driver of the University of Western Australia says that the sun is going to swell up and swallow the Earth in about 5 billion years. Another 5 billion years after that, the sun will collide with the nearest major galaxy, Andromeda. So it's time to face the music. None of us are getting out of this thing alive.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. That's 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Martin Dodge, Demi Hellenius, Monica Rapp.